Welcome to episode 6 of North Lanarkshire Carers Together podcast. My name is Carol Ann. I have had various unpaid caring roles and I work as part of the NLCT team. In this episode, we want to focus on the importance of good health and well-being for unpaid carers. Caring for someone can be challenging and can profoundly affect carers' well-being. More help needs to be put in place to ensure carers are supported to take care of their own well-being and have a life beyond caring. We are delighted today to be joined by Vicky from Lanarkshire Links, Carol from the Health and Wellness Hub, and a huge thank you also to our unpaid carers, Karen, Alan and Yvonne, who have came along today to share their experiences of local supports. So if I can start with yourself, Vicky, who you work for and why you wanted to be involved today.
I'm Vicky, I'm the Development Manager for Lanarkshire Links. We are a charity that supports service users and carers to be involved in the development of mental health services, to identify good practice, where there's gaps and how to make improvements so that services and supports best meet the needs of people that use the services. We are looking to be involved so that we can signpost people to services that are in the Lanarkshire area that can support people for mental health and to highlight the importance of looking after yourself whilst you're looking after others.
Hi, my name is Carol Ramsey and I am the Service Coordinator at the Health and Wellness Hub down in Albert Street. And the Health and Wellness Hub is a tiny, small charity dedicated to bringing holistic therapies and activities to people to improve their well-being, especially mental well-being. And we've also been lucky enough to be involved in the Carer Breather, which is why I think I've been in touch with Vicky and been invited here. And I just think it's a good idea to kind of share the word and kind of persuade carers that they need to take time out for these activities. They're not frivolous, they're essential.
My name is Karen McEwan. I'm a carer for my son who has autism, but I was also a carer for my partner for a period of 10 years who suffered really bad mental health up until the point he took his own life, and now I'm a mental health advocate and I feel that carers' roles, we need more support for our mental health and our mental wellbeing, so I'm here today to raise that awareness.
Hi, my name's Yvonne. I'm a carer for my parents. My mum, mainly because she's got problems with her back. I never really thought of myself as a carer before, because obviously you look after your parents when they're not well. And it was only through meeting folk from Carers Together and Lanarkshire Carers that I realised that I was a carer. And I'm here because to find out if what I can do to improve my health and wellbeing.
My name's Alan McDonald. I also work for North Lanarkshire Carers Together along with Carol Ann, but I'm here in my role as a carer today. I look after my 19-year-old son who's autistic and has some other issues including potential ADHD. Here to give my perspective on it from a male point of view.
Thanks everyone, so let's get started. So within your caring role, can you talk a little about how your own health and well-being has been affected? Maybe some of the challenges you've faced for yourself and or for the person that you care for? And if we maybe start with yourself, Karen.
In my caring role, it can be quite, over the years, it has been quite challenging. When my partner was in one of his psychoses, the difficulty trying to get him support and get him help from the hospital and the mental health services was a challenge in itself. But as a result of that, he wasn't sleeping, so then I wasn't sleeping, so my own mental health and well-being was deteriorating rapid while he was in a psychosis and really was like kind of really unwell. After my partner passed, I still had my caring responsibilities for my son. He was diagnosed with autism at the age of 5, and there was a lot of kind of challenging behaviour and a lot of fighting to try and get him the proper support that he needed, because they were placing him into a mainstream school and I didn't feel mainstream was appropriate for him. So that whole battle of fighting with services and fighting with professionals, and at times you felt as if it was your fault your son was like this, and having the services and fight against you, it makes you feel that you're doing something wrong, and it plays with your mind, and it plays with, am I doing the right thing? Am I doing the wrong thing? And it's that doubt gets put in your mind through going to these meetings, and it's, who do we have that we can turn to come and support us in these meetings? There is organisations there, but they're few and far between, and they're usually pulled in 10 different directions. They have to prioritise what cases they take and what cases they can't take. And for, as a carer, the strain that puts on our mental health to the point where our whole lives are just focused on caring and making sure, like, either wee Luke or big Luke, because my son and my man was both the same name, so it was making sure the two Lukes were safe and well, but in the process of that, you're forgetting about yourself. And a conversation I had with a friend the other day as a mother, and it's been a mother carer, it's like, what's your mothering role and then what's your caring role? And it's like what Yvonne was saying, you don't see yourself as a carer, and it's only when you meet other carers that you can identify that, am I caring, am I doing more than an atypical child? And I really hate using that phrase, but something needs to change for the carers, because we do need more support, and our kids and our loved ones need more support as well.
It's absolutely exhausting for unpaid carers, and I think it's that bit about regurgitating your story.
Yeah.
You know, so you're not just sharing your story once, you're having to do it to every different support or every service that you're trying to access, and that is tiring. So hopefully today will shed some light on some of the good supports out there, and how we can make those links for you. Thank you.
Looking after my mum and dad, at first, like, it was just like, a few years ago, like, needing help with stuff like on the computer and that, because obviously everything's all computerised, and as they're both 80 and over, they're not as up to using computers. And my mum's a computer phobe, but she'll not use anything. So it was started like that, but then my mum's health took a turn for the worst. So I was more involved in it. And what I found was that there wasn't the support. Well, I didn't have any support then, especially when my mum got discharged from hospital. There was no help, like, to see or check to see if we could cope at home with how she was, or if we needed anything else in the home. It was only through, like, Lancashire Carers and Carers Together and that I found out who I could contact to get stuff put in, like a chairlift to get it up and down stairs, because she couldn't get up and down the stairs when she came out of hospital. So what that is something that needs to be looked at, is getting that when they're discharged from hospital, there's make sure that is in place. But a lot of the time it's like trying to put the bound, like, differentiate between, like, the as a daughter or as a carer, and making sure that you're not doing too much for them, letting it still, giving them their independence, and that's hard to do. Sometimes, like, when I go down, like, I stay about 5 minutes away from them, so when I go down, they've always got plenty of food and that, and that's one thing, I make sure that the food and that's sorted for them. But it's like when I go down and have to do stuff down there, sometimes when I go back home, like, I'm so tired that sometimes I don't have my dinner when I go back home, and I've not got any energy to do it in my own house. So it's like finding that balance and getting, like, maybe either a bit more support or whatever, so that I've got some time for myself. I know I'm different because I don't stay with them. Like, there's a lot of folk, like, obviously, like, if it's your son or whatever, but because I'm thingy, so, but the fear sometimes for me is like, if the phone goes and it's one of my parents, is you panic that something's happened and you've got to go down, and it's happened a couple of times, like my mum's maybe done something and I've had to go down, and it's like that you're on edge all the time, worried that something's going to happen, that you're not there, you know what I mean?
You can't switch off.
You can't switch off, so your mind's going all the time. So it's finding some way that the carers can actually get a chance to switch off and thank me.
My experience of my caring role is we didn't actually know my son was autistic until he was diagnosed when he was 11. We always knew there was some slight difference, but we got diagnosed when he was 11. He's now 19. He's been an interesting person. He doesn't really understand. He's got possibly got PDA. We don't really know. But it's quite difficult to get him to do things or be on time for things. And also sometimes he can't really judge risk very well. One of the better examples is the time that we had to go and to drive into Glasgow to pick him up from Buchanan bus station because he ended up in a bus in Dunfermline instead of going to Cumbernauld. We don't really know how that happened, but in terms of support, we haven't hugely had much from that. He's had one or two conversations with CAMHS on the phone. He's still waiting to be assessed for ADHD, and that's a couple of years since that actually happened, that he was put into their workflow. Even though he's an adult, they're going to keep on top of that with him. And the school he went to in Blantyre was actually really good. And they were sometimes not brilliant, but they made some very good accommodations in fourth and fifth year for him to try and ensure his attendance, including reducing classes and coming up with some compromises for timekeeping and things like that. But he just wasn't able to go to school in fifth year. So he did leave school, has attended college, but had to leave college because he couldn't do the work as he wasn't mature enough for that. He is intending to go back to do the same course this year, we hope. He has an interview very soon for it, and hopefully that'll work for him. But we don't have any real other support because we didn't really know we were carers until I actually started working for a carers organisation in 2019. So I didn't have any experience of kind of calling myself a carer, his parent, and maybe that kind of was an issue. If we'd known about that, we could have maybe represented a bit earlier and had a little bit more. Obviously the school knew about his autism before he joined, transitioned to high school, but it didn't necessarily, that was probably the only real thing that happened. So we're kind of just scrambling about with that just now. Still trying to figure him out, even though it's been 19 years. Lovely guy, very charming, but can be incredibly hard work, and also has his own problems. That's the thing, because we have to deal with his problems as well as our own problems. It's caused a lot of mental health issues within the family as well, especially in terms of like very severe anxiety. And I was getting panic attacks and things like that as well, which are really interesting and manifested in some really weird ways.
Alan, and what helped you through that period? What was your release?
I read books and things like that, and at that point I was still doing Taekwondo, but I read books and I'll watch really dull car videos on YouTube, and obviously I've purchased the car that I need to start working on myself as well, so that keeps me occupied.
And talk to your fabulous colleagues as well, of course.
My fabulous colleagues always keep me entertained, especially in terms of going, guess what happened now on a Monday morning. But yes, the psychological effects of it you get worried where he is because he doesn't understand risk. So no clue where he does. Sometimes he switches location off when we're looking for him. He just doesn't understand that kind of thing isn't right. We've got a lot of stuff going on, but we're working through it. And as he gets older, he's starting to be more emotionally mature as well, and is understanding consequence, which is really good. So we're getting to the point where he will understand that if something happens, there is a consequence that comes out of it. So sometimes just doesn't do it, and just melts down less. And he's also on anti-anxiety medication, which you probably kill me for saying it out loud, but that's really made a difference as well in terms of keeping him quite equal a lot of the time and making him just a bit more manageable. It's not that manageable is a terrible word, but you know where I'm coming from. It's that kind of, it's easier to work with, and that's all the support I've really had.
So the next question, if I can just direct to yourself, Carol, and Vicky, really just to talk about how your service supports the identification of unpaid carers, maybe what some of the challenges you see carers face and how you try and combat that with the work that you both do. And if we start with yourself, Carol, because I know obviously the Health and Wellness Hub got some funding through the Carer Breather commissioned project, so it would be really good just to find a wee bit more so that for any carers that are listening to the podcast, they know some of the really good supports that are out there to help them take a short break from caring.
Well, how do we identify an unpaid carer? Well, everybody that walks through the door for the first time actually has to fill in a little bit of paperwork, and just one of the questions right there is, are you an unpaid carer? And obviously sometimes they don't really identify with that, you know, I'm just like, I have my son or my mum or whatever, I just help somebody that I love. So those people that kind of slip through that net, usually we catch them just with conversations, and the staff are really kind of on the ball going, you realise you are actually an unpaid carer. And we have, for us particularly, we have the Carer Breather. It's a drop-in that we run. We usually run it for 6 weeks, and we have lots of volunteer involvement as well, and it's for 2 hours. It's been on a Friday in the past, and you can bring the person that you care for as well, so that you don't even have that worry at the back of your mind, because although you're together, you kind of get to get separate, and you get a wee cup of tea, and you've got other people, so you're maybe not separated by distance, but you're separated by having other people to kind of have a chat, and everybody that attends can have a holistic therapy, so it can be massage, Reiki, and then we have activities, and those are usually, sometimes they're made up on the day, like what are you in the mood for, and we can do a little gentle exercise, we can do quizzes, just anything that takes the carer's mood. But what's funny is sometimes at the beginning we used to just have lunch, and I said, what would you like to do? And they were like, don't be cluttering up our chat time with your activities. They just wanted to sit, have their little bit of lunch and talk to each other. And so for quite a wee while, we just let that roll. And they're very happy. What was the other part of the questions?
Well, I think it was just in terms of, so you've answered a bit about supporting the identification and just talking a wee bit about some of the challenges and barriers. But I think when you had actually mentioned there, Carol, about that natural peer support, you know, friendships are forming, mm-hmm. and they're actually fight. So, and I think that that's a really important message as well, is that as an unpaid carer, you don't have to go to a specific unpaid care peer support group. Yes. That you know, just naturally through people attending the hub, they are then forming friendships and they're talking about their caring roles. So that's quite, and it's nice to hear that you've been led by their needs, that you've decided, well, actually, we'll let it go this way because mm-hmm. this is what carers are looking for. Is there any cost attached to accessing the Carer Breather?
The Carer Breather is fully funded, so it's completely free to attend the Carer Breather. And then what's nice is, so I did say we run it for 6 weeks, so sometimes what we do is we have a wee 2 week gap or whatever, and that's kind of to let, there's a lot of volunteer involvement, it's to let them recharge their batteries between sessions, and maybe if they're tied up every Friday afternoon, but maybe a couple of Fridays where they can do whatever they need to do and take care of their own needs before helping us with another block. So the Carer Breather specifically is completely free of charge. We also have peer support groups on other days, so they're not, the carers don't have to necessarily be left hanging for the times where there's no group, because we have peer support groups running other days, which is also free. You can attend for community wellbeing hubs, and you can actually get therapies. Those ones, although they're not free, are very low cost, so you can get a therapy for £3. Wow. So that is the main goal of the Health and Wellness Hub, is to have these holistic therapies, arts and crafts as well, just activities, and many of them are free or extremely low cost, or we're trying to make them as free as possible. So I did mention the arts and craft, that's also free. Some people like to come and make a donation, but it's absolutely not essential. And
that's fantastic to hear, because again, that's another real barrier to people accessing services. We're in this cost of living, people choosing between eating and heating their homes, and you know, and again, with carers just naturally being selfless, they'll not want to spend money on themselves, and hopefully our conversation today will highlight the importance of self-care. And you know, it sounds like the Hub are doing amazing work in terms of, you know, bringing down some of those barriers to people tapping into the services and support. So that's fantastic, Carol.
You've actually just mentioned one of the biggest barriers, and I kind of touched it a little bit before the introduction. One of the biggest challenges is that people feel, I shouldn't be here getting a massage and drinking tea. I should be away to Asda getting the shopping in, or a million other things, a big list as long as their arm, that they feel is more important. But people literally look 10 years younger after the group, you know, they're just sat with a cup of tea.
Well, here, where do I sign up?
A wee massage, whatever they felt like. And they literally leave looking way younger, like the weight of the world's been lifted off their shoulders temporarily, at least. And even for the people that are cared for, sometimes they're getting a lot of it as well, you know, getting a bit of different chat. They only look 5 years younger, though.
That's great. Sounds like there's amazing work going on. That's absolutely fantastic to hear, Carol. Thank you. Vicky, so if I could just ask the same question to yourself, how does Lanarkshire Links support identification of unpaid carers, and maybe some of the challenges you see and how you tackle them?
Pretty much the same as Carol says. People contact Lanarkshire Links looking for support for their loved one. Often by the time that they're contacting Lanarkshire Links, they're at their wit's end, totally frustrated because they're not getting a straight answer from here, there or anywhere. They can't go through to their GP, and they're looking for something for their loved ones to stop a crisis coming, and through conversations with that person, it's, and what are you doing for yourself, you know, and it's like, what do you mean? Do you know, because it's not even on their radar at that point. And sometimes a carer knows that person better than services are ever going to know, so they can identify what's needed better than a GP or a psychiatrist in terms of their well-being needs, not their medical needs, you know, what's going to help them in the community to live at home. But they never ever think about themselves in that role, or very rarely. Maybe it's been a long time they've been in that role, and they might think, I'm doing a bit more than being a mum, a dad, a husband or wife, that they will self-identify, but it's always through conversations with them. And do you realise that you are an unpaid carer here?
And I think to validate also that, and you hit the nail on the head there when you had said that, you know, carers know the person they're looking after better than anybody. Why wouldn't we want to involve them in conversations? Why wouldn't we want to involve them in, you know, the development of services and local policies? And I think that that's where carers can sometimes feel frustrated, you know, if they feel, oh, my views aren't being listened to. And I think sometimes with access and other services like that, Links in the Hub, you're not being asked those questions directly, but through natural conversations we're unpicking some of that, and we're actually validating that person's role as an unpaid carer. We're then able, that then opens up a whole dialogue around, do you know you have rights as an unpaid carer? So it's, we always say within our staff team, never underestimate the power of a really good conversation, and that starts with having a good listening ear. And I think if a carer feels that they're being supported regardless of whose door they present to, then I think it's a really good starting point. It dates them and it validates the role that they provide, and it shows them as equal partners in care as well.
Very rarely is their issues a unique issue, you know, that way, and sometimes we can not introduce them to, as in, come and meet this person, but come along to the Wellness Hub, do you know, that way, and there'll be other people there. We won't tell anybody your story, but if you get them round the table, naturally those conversations happen, and it's those, oh my god, somebody else is in that situation, do you know that way, and how did you handle that, or have you had this, do you know that way. And the peer-to-peer support is often more valuable than what any organisation can bring to it, but the organisations are needed to bring these people together. There is that safety in numbers, I suppose, in knowing that you're being supported in those numbers. The biggest challenges are getting carers to accept that they're carers. They're not just a parent, they're not just a husband or a son or daughter. Giving them that space to vent their frustration, but also the guilt that comes along with it, or the shame in some terms, do you know, that way that I should be able to do this. I'm a mum, I'm a daughter, do you know, that way that this is part of my role. I'm a husband, that, you know, I shouldn't be needing to reach out. Do you know, that way there's a lot of guilt in somebody looking out to look after themselves, especially in terms of mental health, the stigma and discrimination that people face, even sometimes saying those words out loud. I know nowadays it's easier to ask about mental health, but the older generation, especially men, when they're having to deal with their wife and they feel as if they're a bit of a loss. We recently ran with the Health and Wellbeing Hub a sort of wellness session, and it was quite a mix of male and female, and I genuinely didn't think the guys were going to engage, but the difference in them at the end of the 8 weeks was, you know, when are you doing that again? Have you got funding yet? Do you know, that way they loved coming along and having their hand massage and the therapies. They'd never even thought to try it before, but it's just given them that permission to have had their feelings and be supported to have those feelings and have a healthy way of dealing with it.
And how powerful is that evidence? That's, you know, we need facts and figures for our funders, don't we? Yeah. But that's the real proof.
And it's really hard to capture that, do you know, that way. Some of the other carers groups specifically, in terms of mental health, the forensic carers group, that is a unique group of caring needs that they have. And the stories that you get from that are quite powerful. But you can capture that in a bit of paper, you know, for funders. You know, they need to actually come along and listen to them face to face and hear their experiences, because putting it on a bit of paper isn't going to tell them the full story.
Face to face, you see that positive impact, don't you? And you can actually, you can almost see the relief from the you know, the people that participate in it, because they've got somebody else that can resonate. And I think that is the really powerful bit of, you know, accessing a wee bit of peer support as well, is that you don't feel as lonely and as isolated just through somebody else being able to say, I get you, I know what you mean, and actually it's okay to feel rubbish, you know, but it's about, if those days of feeling defeated roll into weeks, and, you know, so it's okay to give ourselves permission to say, I'm having a rotten day today. And what we tend to see as well is that certainly within our wee staff team, if you've got one person having a bad day, we pick each other up. Thankfully, we don't all have the same bad days. That would be a bit of a nightmare. But, you know, it is just that bit about the value of sitting down and being listened to, and your opinions being valid and important.
I'll come in and tell them that I'm in a bad mood. I'm in a rotten mood today.
He does,
really,
to
sorry.
Be fair, he does.
That's it. Sorry if I'm in a lead. I'll put my hands up to it.
And it's not about fixing it for anybody else. You know, it's
not at all
fixing it. It's just about letting them have that space to have those feelings. You know, if you're a carer and you're caring for somebody 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, or 3 hours a week, do you know, that way, you're okay to be angry. It's all right to be annoyed. Do you know, that way? It's absolutely fine, because even if you weren't a carer, you would still feel that way sometimes.
That's,
you know,
true.
That way. But it's the guilt and the always on edge and always having to feel on, that people don't feel when they are caring for somebody, that they're allowed to have those feelings.
Yeah, or allowed that downtime.
See, I do feel that peer support has really helped me, especially after Look Past. When Luke passed, I always say Luke died, he lost his battle of mental health, or he lost his battle of depression, because that's how I like to portray it. And when that happened, at that time, I didn't know where to go, I didn't know what organisation to try and get help from, and you're just absolutely lost after the person you're caring for dies. And like you were saying, the guilt and even worse when it's suicide, because it doesn't matter how many people tell you it wasn't your fault or you couldn't have done anything, mm-hmm. you're always going to have, and that's personal experience talking to you, I'm always going to have that wee bit, I could have done this, I could mm-hmm. have done that. So you're constantly living with that. But who can you talk to? And the best people to talk to, the best people that get it and understand, is people that's walked the journey you've walked. Mm-hmm. And that support is invaluable. And to be honest, through the people I've met in my journey for Loss and Look, I wouldn't be sitting here today if it wasn't for them, because they have pulled me out of some pretty dark, horrible situations. So peer support in general does really make a difference to our lives.
But the words peer support even puts people off accessing it, you know. It's how we get that out there, that without labelling it as part peer support, you know, it's come along and this is a safe space, do you know that way? Especially when you're talking about subjects like mental health and loss by suicide, nobody else gets that journey until they've walked that journey. And it's a horrible journey, but there are other people out there that have had to walk that horrible journey too, and will be feeling maybe not all the same emotions at the same time as you. Some will be further on in their journey, some are right at the beginning. And when somebody's right at the beginning of that journey, having somebody that's 6 years down the line, 6 months down the line, is that person that you want to cling on to, you know. And it's making sure that you're protecting yourself as well as the people that you're supporting, peer support, formal support, or any other support.
So, fantastic discussions, everyone. I just want to end with one final question for you. If you had that proverbial magic wand, what would you like to see to better improve services and supports, particularly around health and wellbeing for unpaid carers?
Well, given that I haven't been able to fix this like in a sensible way, if I have to use my magic wand for it, the transport issues, that comes up with group after group, organisation after organisation. If everybody could get the money for a bus and a driver just to carry people about as and when required, because that is a massive barrier that just seems, it seems to be unfixable when it's really quite an easy fix, but I don't know how to fix it yet. So if I have to rely on my magic, then that's what I'll do.
My thing in that is, it's like, because some places, like for as a carer to go to, if you go because it's like going from to Hamilton, it's 10 minutes in the car. But for me to get from my place to Hamilton, because the way the bus goes, it can be 45 minutes. So that adds that time. So that's an hour and a half added onto the time I'm away. And like that puts added stress on me, because you're always worried that, are you going to get a phone call saying that you need to go back because you've been away so much?
Yeah, totally. That's exactly what we hear all the time, you know, from people.
But even getting to the health and wellness hub, like, you can get the bus to the town centre in Motherwell, but then it's that walk down, and if your health isn't great, if you're maybe bringing who you're caring for with you, if their health isn't great, getting down there is no, well, maybe no getting down there, but getting back up is really hard for them. So that restricts you so to going places, because the access like that to get to places.
And another issue I would say is social anxiety. When people have got bad mental health themselves, due to their care and responsibilities or other things that are going on in their life, They're not going to want to walk down a busy main street to get to somewhere because of the social anxieties, thinking everybody's looking at them, and it's that aspect. So if they did have a bus that would be able to take them straight from their door to the place, you'd probably find more people would be able to come, because they would have that security that they know how they're getting there. They're not having to put themselves in a situation that they can't control. And I think a lot of people would benefit from that.
So definitely more funding would be helpful. It would break down some of those barriers. And I think, because you were mentioning, Yvonne, when we had that wee break there, that you're starting a wee class, which is absolutely fantastic, because that's you recognising your own wellbeing and a wee bit of self-care. But, you know, you also recognise there's some barriers to that as well.
Yeah,
the class, it's a Tai Chi class, and the guy does a Tai Chi class in Hamilton. But the restrictions for that is, it's like for me to get to Hamilton, the way the 201 goes, you're talking about sometimes, if it's really busy, an hour to get to where it is. So that's not any good, because by the time you get there, you're stressed out because you've been on that so long, and then it's getting back from Hampton, because if it's okay if it's a day class, but if it's an evening class, the buses from Hampton are only 1 hour, and it's the same from, like, even from Wishaw down, or else the other way from Airdrie Coat Bridge down at night, after a certain time, there's only one bus an hour. So if you miss that bus, like, that's even longer. Thankfully, Jay, that's doing the Tai Chi, I've said for them for a while to get one in Bells Hill, because I'm sure it would do well. So this Friday's the first day of him doing this, so it's for so many weeks he's trying it out. I think it's 13 weeks, he says. He's going to try it out in Bells Hill and see how it goes. So hope, fingers crossed. Because,
so he's listened. So yeah, that's good that they've listened.
But he's a carer as well. So he cares for his mum. So obviously that's how it's taken a while for him to do that, because although he's doing, like, the Tai Chi, which helps him, and, like, obviously other things that he's doing, but obviously he's got to watch as well for his, you know, his caring role. So it swings and roundabouts, obviously, because he's doing it, and it's for us, but obviously he has to then again look after his mum and his caring roles, so it's hard.
But he gets it because he's an unpaid carer, and sometimes that's what it comes down to as well. People understanding those pressures.
It's also about people knowing about these services. You know, for me, the amount of good stuff that is going on in the communities that's local to people is immeasurable. You know, there's loads of stuff, lots of different organisations, lots of groups, lots of individuals are doing stuff, but there's no central point to access this, and unless you know about it, you don't know about it. And the move to digital, and move to things being online, people that are older, that are digitally excluded, are not hearing about these things, and they're the ones that are less likely to pick up the phone and ask the question, and they only know about it through either word of mouth, because advertising in newspapers is gone, you don't get your local free stuff, people very rarely put leaflets through the door, so people are being left behind and left out because they don't know about all this good stuff that's going on.
Even, like, you're saying that Tai Chi class is happening in Bells Hill, I stay in Bells Hill, and I hadn't even a clue that that was coming out. So, like what you're saying with the advertising and stuff like that,
how do we find out? How do we bring all this information together to let people know about it? Whether it's carer specific, mental health specific, or if it's just about
everything,
doing something, you know, giving activities out there.
There is amazing work going on in North Lanarkshire. They're actually one of the better local authorities in terms of certainly all the third sector work that's going on, and that joint up approach. But that's interestingly enough, when you're talking about the information, that's what sparked our 10-week information campaign, because we realised we need to try and make sure that we're getting that information out to carers. They're telling us they don't know where to access it, and the majority of that is digital, but again, to try and combat some of the other barriers around people not having access to computers and you know, web browsers on mobile phones, any activity that our team are doing over the next 10 weeks, we're taking whatever that theme is for the week, and we're trying to, so if it's carer supports, it's taking out information that's going on across North Lanarkshire. But yeah, there's amazing work getting done. It's just about bringing that together, joining up the dots, and I think at least, you know, regardless of what door the carer presents at, if partners are aware of what's going on out there, they can hopefully share that with the carer themselves.
Well, I know, like in Bells Hill, like the West Church, on a Tuesday morning between 10 and I think it's 10 or half 11, I think it is, you can go down and get a tea and coffee and just a chat, and it's just,
it's
free.
Just about sharing that, isn't it?
You know, so that's on there.
Yeah.
I know the St Andrew's Church do it one day, but I don't know what day it is, but it's like that, it's known.
It's
no way to look. I honestly wouldn't have knew that. The only one I know that does it is the St. Salvation Army. Mm-hmm. I think they do a wee thing every day, but I wouldn't have even knew the services were there.
Because the West Church is good, because once a month they do a movie night, you know what I mean? So it is good. What they do quite a bit in the West Church. Mm-hmm. But as I say, it's fine now in, because like when I was looking for information about stuff that was going on, it's really hard.
Mm-hmm. So what would you do with a magic wand then, Yvonne? A magic wand, would you want information accessible for everybody? What would that look like for you?
I think for people to find out, it's like in libraries or else even sometimes like posters in like supermarkets saying like if there was something on somewhere, you know, so that they can see. But even if there was like Carers Together done, like a wee list, I know there is one, it's in Glasgow, some in Glasgow does one, but even if there was like somewhere that somebody could go online and say, well, this is on in Bells Hill, that's on in Bells Hill, and there was like a central place that everybody in Bells, if anybody in Bells Hill was having in, that they could put it on for not even carers, but mm-hmm. just for the general public. If there was something on, there'd be a central place on the computer that we could get on, and then like obviously to say mm-hmm. like whoever we're caring for or whatever. But
and carer specific's another barrier if you mm-hmm. meet it carer specific, because not everybody thinks a carer, so it's about opening it up to the public, isn't it?
And if I can just say that there's actually something like that, but it's getting every provider to get
Alice.
Into the same one. Mm-hmm. Yeah, thank you.
Is that?
It's a tool called Alice, but what we can do mm-hmm. at the end of the podcast as well is we can put some links in to some local supports that anybody listening to can find out a wee bit more, or indeed can link in with mm-hmm. any of our guests here today, including North Lanarkshire Carers Together.
I think the other thing that could be improved is discharge planning mm-hmm. and involving people.
Is that what you do with the magic wand, Vicky? What would you do with the magic wand?
I would like to see a specific mental health service, not just part of the NHS, where people who need access to mental health supports were giving it, rather than it being part of the NHS, and for mental health and wellbeing to be considered as part of anybody's stay in a ward, and what their life looks like as part of the discharge planning, and who's involved and what support's available for them in terms of looking after themselves. Because if somebody's being discharged, whether it be a child or an elderly person or somebody from a mental health ward, you need to keep the carers well in order to make sure that that support is going to be consistent and stable, and it can't always be passed on to the carers, because if their mental health or their physical health goes, then we're breaking the links in the chain, and we need to make sure that chain's there to support the people around about it.
But the discharge plan is not happening twice. My mum has been in hospital, and both times she was discharged and nothing was done to make sure. We just went up and says, oh, she's getting out this afternoon, and says, mm-hmm. and that was it.
And I think that there is a lot of work to be done, but I think some of the issues we're aware of, and it's about working through that. But it's for us, you know, I think there's that bit about don't make the assumption that there's always going to be somebody that's able to pick up the pieces mm-hmm. or that's going to be there for that person when they leave hospital. And again, you know, even just for, you know, my magic wand would be that every single carer and every professional knew that there was legislation mm-hmm. and they knew what their rights were, so that they are able to say what they're willing and able to provide, because that's huge as well. So for me, it's about partners and carers, not just the assumption not being made that it will fall on one person mm. to pick up that. You know, it's about validating them as an individual and having a conversation to say, well, actually, Yvonne, what care are you able to provide? Mm-hmm. And that in turn gives you a balance between your own quality mm-hmm. of life and your caring responsibilities. Karen, what about you with the magic wand?
There's so much I could say, and I'd just like to back up what Vicky was saying. I agree that accident emergency when someone's in a mental health crisis is not an appropriate setting, because their heads are already going 100 miles an hour, and then you're putting them into this busy environment where it just magnifies their symptoms even worse, and it needs to be somewhere where you can get support 24/7, 365 days a week, and you get that assessment there and then as and when it's required. So I would totally back up what Vicky's saying. But if I had a magic wand, I would just want a more trauma-informed society, because I think a lot of this does go back to trauma from different aspects, and even, I don't like to say it's trauma-y being a carer, but it's challenging, it's difficult, and we do need support as well. And if there was a more compassionate society, then maybe others would understand just how hard that is to be a carer, whether it's with somebody with autism, mental health, physical illness, whether it's your mum, your dad, your son, your sister, whatever it may be. There needs to be more compassion in this society, because our mental health system is on its knees, to the point where suicide rates are absolutely through the roof. And then a missing part that's kind of missed out of mental health, and I suppose maybe in the caring role as well, is addiction. People who are supporting someone through addiction, which is very challenging, and there is such a lack of support for addiction as a whole, but especially for the carers of them. And these responsibilities, they fall on our government, who, if they had a more trauma-informed policies, would maybe have a better society today.
And I think it can also be said that addiction can even be that the carer ends up, you know, with addiction issues, yeah, because it may be that it's a coping strategy, and it might be a way of them managing, yeah, the caring role as well. But I think, you know, it really is about having a more, I hate the word holistic, but it really is, it's about having a conversation, yeah, and nothing's black and white.
No.
So it's looking at the, you know, the person that's needing the support, but also validating and looking at what the carers' needs are in order to sustain that caring role.
It's just where I see that, but come back to the accident central hub or an accident emergency just for mental health in Lanarkshire. 74,180 people attended the three hospitals through mental health related issues in the last year.
Wow.
And they could, like, the referrals and stuff like that are absolutely through the roof. Wait times in Lanarkshire for adult mental health, I don't have that statistics, but for children's general mental health is 155 weeks. To get an assessment for autism or ADHD, their waiting lists are 205 weeks wait. That's 4 years nearly.
Mm-hmm.
And you've got carers who are pulling their hair out their head to get their children these assessments to make sure that their children gets to the right school, they get the right support in school. Because that, I think my magic wand as well would be on the full kind of school system and the support and the lack of ASM places in Lanarkshire.
Yeah. So that magic wand's got a lot of work to do.
I think in terms of Lanarkshire Link's magic wand, we need people to come along to help inform these services.
Mm-hmm.
Lanarkshire Link's is about that service user and carer voice. It's not about what Lanarkshire Link's wants. We need people who have got experience of mental health and caring for somebody with mental health to come along and share their experiences, because that's what we're commissioned to do, is to involve people,
mm-hmm,
in the service development, to inform what's working, what's not working, and have that direct link with health and social care, to make these improvements, mm-hmm, to make the changes right down to the carer discharge plans, the risk assessments, and to service design. You know, that's what our organisation is, and Lanarkshire Links needs members to have that voice and strengthen that voice.
Yeah. And how would somebody get in touch with the organisation, Vicky?
Either through our website or to give us a phone at the office, or you'll see me out and about in my stall, here, there and everywhere as much as possible.
But if they go on to atlanarkshirelinks.org.uk. Okay, and yourself, Carol, how would people link in with the hub?
Our website is the health and wellness hub, all one word, .org.uk.
Fantastic. I think all that's left to do now, we could talk all day about some of these issues, but I want to say a huge thank you to all of my guests today. So thank you, Carol, Vicky, and also a thank you to our carers that have taken the time to come along today. That's Alan, Yvonne and Karen. And if you need any information in relation to your caring role, you can also access North Lanarkshire Carers Together.org online. Thank you very much, everybody.
So after a lost look, I decided I was going to do something about it. So I decided to do a petition into the Petitions Committee and at the Scottish Parliament. Now the petition that I'm trying to, what I'm trying to get is a full review of the mental health service, because I believe our mental health service is not fit for purpose. The data throughout the full of Scotland, like the wait times are averaging throughout the full of Scotland 108 weeks. And that's only an average. There is some health boards that are sitting at 365 weeks, which is Highlands, but then you've got some that are slightly better, but not one of them is meeting their 18-week targets. So what I'm kind of asking for is a full review to incorporate all aspects of mental health, from community, older adult, child, forensics, and in the criminal justice system and in the prisons. So it's a full incorporation of the full mental health system we're trying to get. And the petition is on the Petitions Committee at Parliament, and it's petition PE1871. If people could just sign it. It does have quite a lot of signatures, and it is under consideration, and it's been up at the committee a good few times, and it's due up in 2 weeks' time. So if you could just sign that to try and keep that momentum going, that mental health needs attention and mental health needs major reform, and we can't keep putting this plaster on it anymore.